everybody. Welcome back to the Rock Your Relationships podcast. This is Chuck and Betsy, and we are recording from inside our house, unlike last time where we were sitting outside because it has gotten cold here in Birmingham, and I'm very happy about that. I love the cold.
Yeah, you're a fan of the cold. I think you and Charlie are, but Claire Ellen and I are not quite as enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
Though I do love the fall weather, the changing of the leaves. It's really pretty out. And actually, that reminds me of something that happened once where it was a beautiful fall day.
Okay.
And we had gone to a Samford football game. I think we had had some of the kids' sports that morning. And then the afternoon we came back, maybe we ate out after the Samford game. It was just basically a perfect fall day.
Sounds like a perfect day, yes.
But at the end of the day, I realized that I wasn't happy. My mood was low. Things that should have made me laugh didn't make me laugh. And I kind of checked myself and was like, what is going on here? Because I couldn't have set up a better fall Saturday to enjoy time with my family, doing all these things that I enjoy, and yet I'm not getting enjoyment out of it. And that was really a clue to something that was going on. My emotional cup was full. I didn't know it going into the day, but that was the sign, because when your emotional cup is full of negative emotion, when you try to pour those positive emotions on top of it, they just run right off.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like if you think of a cup that's, you know, full of sand, and then you try to put more sand into it, you know, or water or whatever, there's not any room for it. It's just going to overflow and make a mess. Yeah. So if our listeners don't know about the emotional cup, they can go back and listen to earlier podcasts, earlier core teachings, or you can go to our website, chuckandbetsy.org, and learn more about the emotional cup that way. We have a video and a handout. But it's basically what intimacy theory is based on as far as dealing with emotions.
Right.
I think I remember you telling this story before, like to me, maybe we shared it on the podcast, but I remember that day too, when it kind of hit you and you realized stuff gets stuck in our emotional cups. And even if you sleep on it and you wake up and it's a brand new day, if you haven't dealt with that stuff, it still stays in there.
It's still there, and the positive stuff just overflows. And sometimes the negative stuff can overflow too.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing we want to talk about today. What happens when your cup gets so full that it starts overflowing with negative things? What do we do?
Yeah.
And there are really three main ways that we cope with an overflow of negativity.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you say cope, because the three main ways that we cope are not pleasant for anyone else. So it's like we're coping, but we're not doing anything beneficial for the situation. Because the best way, if you are full of negative emotions so much that you're overflowing in these negative ways that we're about to talk about, the best way to deal with that is to empty your emotional cup, to get the care you need, so that you can have room for positive emotions and so that you can spread positivity. But unfortunately, a lot of us don't get help, or we don't know where to go. We just don't know what to do with these negative emotions. So we do get full and we start coping. I'm doing air quotes right now, by the way. We start coping with these things in our life by putting up these obstacles to intimacy. We call them obstacles to intimacy because once you start acting in one of these three ways, or all of them put together, depending on how complicated you are, you put up a wall and people can no longer help you empty your cup, and you can't build connections.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why it's so important to be aware of this, because you may be desperately wanting to connect with other people.
Yeah.
You're hurting, but when you cope in these ways, instead of making those connections with other people, you're actually blocking it.
Yeah. Oh, and I kind of have a quick story too, that happened to me in college. Is I didn't realize that my cup was full in a lot of ways. My emotional cup was full of a lot of negative emotions. And I joined a sorority. And it was really a great experience in a lot of ways. But I saw the girls around me making a lot of connections, and I felt kind of left out. I thought, why am I not connecting with these girls on the same level that they're connecting with one another? And I was just as a nice of a person, you know, as everyone else. But it was because I really was dealing with some depression in my life that I thought I could separate from this situation. You know, my life with the sorority sisters could be separate from my life with other people who were causing me a lot of pain. But I realized my cup was full. I mean, I realize now, at the time I was really confused, my cup was full. So I wasn't able to really enjoy the sisterhood that we were trying to build in the sorority. But now though, as an adult, when I try to connect with friends, it's really wonderful. But and I see, oh, because I have dealt with that stuff in my emotional cup, I am really able to have sincere and profound connections to people, and I really am able to have those friendships.
Yeah, and one last point on this. It's not like because your cup was full a lot of the time in college, that meant you were sort of always dysfunctional.
Right.
Right, because what happens is our cups get full of negative emotions, some of which has been in there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's just a little bit of space for positive emotion, but it only takes a little bit of negative stuff coming in when you're at that stage.
Right, when you're almost full. Right.
Yeah, so if you have a relatively stress-free situation or there's not a lot of negativity coming in, then you might go around with a fairly full cup for a long time without any dysfunction.
Yeah.
But when that stress or negativity, something happens to sort of pour on, there's just no room for it to go anywhere.
That's right. Yeah. And I think in my case, I was quite functional and was doing great in school, and the areas where I nothing was really being asked of me emotionally, I was rocking it. I was doing great. But when I was put into the situation of sisterhood, I just didn't have any more room to connect, you know, to really allow other people to love me and to love them. But I still had a great experience. A lot of great girls. Yeah, and we all grew together. Okay, so Chuck, will you tell us the three obstacles to intimacy that we use to cope when our cup is full of negative emotions?
So there's self-reliance, self-condemnation, and selfish taking.
Okay, yes. So self-reliance, we'll start with that one because I think that's your pet obstacle to intimacy, your pet symptom of overflow.
Right. And I think it's pretty clearly the most socially acceptable one, too, in our country.
Yeah. But it's also my pet, too. I think more, I used to struggle more with self-condemnation, but now if I start to feel like my cup is full and I just am so done, period, you know, and I turn to self-reliance. I kind of put up that wall and I realize I just say in my mind, you know what? I don't need you people. I'll deal with it myself.
Yeah. And if you, I think most people's reaction when they hear these three things, they're like self-condemnation. Oh, that's a bad thing.
That's
selfish
bad.
Taking. That's bad. Self-reliance. Hey, what's wrong with that? Isn't that a virtue?
Right. I'm just American. I just, you know, it's exactly. I mean, we really value self-reliance. But self-reliance in this case is actually denying that you have needs. So remember, if you're not getting your needs met, like you need comfort and you need conviction of guilt and all that so that you can empty your emotional cup. But if you are denying it, then you're stuck in self-reliance. So you might be saying to yourself, I have no needs, but if I did, I'd take care of them myself.
And note that in this case, it's important to specify that we're talking about relational needs.
Yeah,
because you might
be
like, well, of course I know I need to, you know, provide for myself and those kinds of things, and I can handle that.
I need food and water and shelter and clothing, and
But relational needs necessitate connection.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be vulnerable in order to connect. And when you're in self-reliance, you're not vulnerable. It's the last thing you want to be. A scripture verse to help us understand this obstacle to intimacy is Revelation 3:17. And Jesus is speaking in a revelation to the churches, and he says, you say, I do not need a thing, but you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. So this church he was addressing was expressing a self-reliance. So they didn't need him. They didn't need anybody. But let's read Galatians 3:1-5. And it says, after beginning with the spirit, are you now trying to attain your goal by human effort? Have you suffered so much for nothing? And so there, St. Paul is talking to a church and saying, you know, at the beginning, you were relying on Christ. You were relying on grace. And now you're trying to just do everything yourself. And that suffered so much for nothing is so accurate, because those who are stuck in self-reliance truly suffer for nothing, because they stop leaning on others. They stop getting their needs met entirely. They put up these walls and become like, you know, is it Simon and Garfunkel? I'm a rock. I'm an island. Uh-huh. I used to love that song when I was in high school. And I still kind of like it. But still, we're not rocks. We're not islands. So if you're in self-reliance, your view of God, your view of the church, your view of the gospel is that it's unessential or inessential.
To your relational needs. Right. You may have a good sense of grace for salvation. And we can even be like modal when we're in kind of church mode, spiritual mode.
Mm-hmm.
We might talk about our need for Christ and how grace is so important and really believe all those things. But then when we're hurting and we need to connect with another person, mm-hmm. Another human who's, you know, right across from us, we kind of go into a shell and say, I don't need this person. I can handle this myself. I'm hurting and I will just pull myself up by my bootstraps, whatever that means.
Right.
And deal with it.
Yeah, I've heard a phrase before, the same grace that saved you is the grace that sustained you. And that is just such a great truth to keep in mind every single day. Yeah, that you still need grace. So how does self-reliance manifest? As impatience, irritation, kind of a numbness. I know I put up these walls that I can almost feel. I can almost feel when they go up. It's a judgmental attitude, a criticism of others, also kind of a workaholism, overwork, mm-hmm. perfectionism, because everything depends on you. Oh my gosh, you better get it done. You better do it right, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it can also disguise itself. So self-reliance can disguise itself as a confidence or even a holiness.
Yeah, you know, when I was in high school, before I'd ever heard about any of those things, and even early college as well, a lot of people looking at me from the outside said, oh, you've really got it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were Mr. Green and White.
That's right.
Sorry. I just remember when we were dating and I saw your high school yearbook and there was that full page, full color photo of you, and it said Mr. Green and White. And I was like, dang, I'm dating Mr. Green and White.
Yeah, that's my claim to fame. Hopefully I didn't peak there.
No, I don't think so. That'd be pretty bad.
But you can be really confident, and because you're not expressing your needs to others, because you're not looking to other people to get relational needs met,
yeah,
it looks like, whoa, this person has it all together. Mm-hmm. It can look like that from the outside.
Right.
And you might be really trying to help other people, you know, doing a lot of good and kind and charitable things.
Oh, hard as part worker. Of your self-reliance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, not even as part of your self-reliance, just something that you do or that you think is important. But mm-hmm. when it comes to your own relational needs, that wall goes up. You know, like,
yeah,
I've
you're
got
fine.
This.
You don't
fine.
Need anything. Right.
And one other little piece of this that makes it so tricky to deal with, and this was true for me, is that you do have a relationship with God and you go to Him when you're hurting. So I journaled and I was
able
to...
What are you talking about? When you were in self-reliance?
Yeah, in self-reliance. Oh, so okay. I was able to talk to God about anything that was going on in my life. And I think that God will meet those needs. He's a person, three in one person.
Uh-huh.
And
three persons, one God.
And God will meet those needs that we have in a real relationship. But there comes a point when He wants us to connect with other mm-hmm. other people here on earth.
Yeah.
And that he'll back off from meeting those needs directly because He wants to push you to others. And so really for a lot of my time in high school, my relationship with God was that vital relationship where those needs were met. But then about midway through college, He started to pull back from that. And I didn't know it at the time, but it was because He wanted me to push me to connect with other people.
Yeah.
And to learn how to build community and have those needs met in other people. And I really didn't like that. I responded with irritation.
Mm-hmm. Like, we get irritated when we can't meet our own needs or when other people have needs and we don't understand why they aren't just pulling up their bootstraps and dealing with it. It's irritating. And we think, hey, loser, I am handling myself. You can handle yourself.
Exactly. So as long as my cup wasn't full, if other people had needs, I was happy to be the charitable one who was helping them.
Uh-huh.
But when my cup was full and somebody else expressed a need, that's when that irritation that you're talking about would show up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, what's the treatment, Chuck? What's the treatment that you and I both have to deal with when we go into this?
Well, you have to be humble.
Yeah. You have to treat your self-reliance with humility and a sober view of yourself and empty your emotional cup.
Right, which you can do once you stop operating in self-reliance, because then you realize you need other people and others can help you empty your emotional cup.
Yeah, these obstacles to intimacy are almost like putting a cap on the cup. Like, no one can get in and nothing can get out.
Mm-hmm. You know? Especially this one.
Yeah, you got to break through it so that you can healthily make connections and empty your negative emotions. Okay, well, if that one's not enough for you, listeners, here's the next obstacle to intimacy that we use to quote-unquote cope.
Self-condemnation. So in self-condemnation, you're denouncing your own neediness. You're ashamed to say that you have needs, and you may assume that they probably either shouldn't or won't get met.
Yeah. So some scriptures that help explain self-condemnation is Romans 8:1, where Paul says, "There is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus." And Philippians 4:19, he says, "And my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus." So what Paul says in Philippians, "My God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus." What does this have to do with self-condemnation? Well, when you're in self-condemnation, you know that you're needy, but you kind of hate yourself for it. And mm-hmm. you also think, oh, they won't get met. This person isn't going to help me. This person isn't going to help me. You kind of get stuck in this mode of just wondering why everything works out for everyone else, but not for you. And I don't mean to be flippant about this, because this is an element of depression, and it's very serious. And you really, when you're stuck in it, I'm speaking from experience, you cannot see the other perspective. You can't see the perspective that there are ways to get your need met. Yeah, you really feel like all your avenues are blocked. So I'm not making fun of anyone here by any means, but it's just not true. So that's, you know, why I'm treating it kind of lightly. Like, the enemy really wants us to be convinced our needs are never going to get met. Nobody cares. And even those who care are never going to be skilled enough or maybe get us enough to really help. But Paul says, not only do we have needs, but Jesus will meet them. And I don't mean to be proof texting here, which is where you just pull a Bible verse out and say, oh, this explains everything. But it's really true. It really is. Jesus does want to meet your needs. They just might not be the way that you picture.
You know, and this is one where some of this may come from how you've been treated before mm-hmm. when you've expressed needs.
That's true.
So if
it's a learned response.
Say maybe you grew up in a home with a lot of self-reliant people who sort of treated your needs with disdain. What's wrong with you? Get your stuff together.
Uh-huh.
You know, that kind of thing. Then you might say, oh, well, my needs are bad. You kind of turn in on yourself.
And I shouldn't have needs. There's something wrong with me.
And so that develops a pattern of self-condemnation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're stuck in self-condemnation, your view of God, the church, and the gospel is that they are ineffectual for your needs. And that might manifest, so self-condemnation might manifest as self-destructive behaviors like anorexia. This is some serious stuff we're talking about. Self-hatred, self-injury, promiscuity, depression. False guilt, just even something as simple as negative self-talk, mm-hmm. you know?
When the voices in your head are telling you you're stupid, or that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, loser. Why don't you, you know, just shut up or what? Just go away. Yeah. You know, eventually self-condemnation and this thought that no one can ever meet your needs and it can never get better might lead to suicidal thoughts, you know, and tendencies and actions.
And most of the time at kind of an ordinary level, it's like you start feeling this need emerge and you just try to squash it.
Yeah. Yeah. You just try to squash it because you think it shouldn't be there. When the truth is, Jesus knows you have needs. He created you on purpose to need people and to love and be loved by others, and he wants to meet them. Yeah.
So what's the antidote for this?
The antidote is actually gratitude, which is interesting because you might think that the antidote would be something like cheering up or like a positive outlook, but it's actually gratitude because you can't be grateful unless you're receptive, and you can't be receptive until you believe that you are able to receive, like, and that there is something out there for you to receive. So that's why some of those exercises, like the 1,000 Days of Gratitude, or I'm probably butchering it, it's a really popular blog and a book that people have talked about, but I've never really looked into it. But just this idea of being grateful for little things, that it really does help because you realize that there's all these things out there that are positive and there's people who love you and they care about you and you're grateful. Because when you're stuck in self-condemnation, you're in this mindset that everything sucks, okay? And you can't be grateful. And if you start to receive something that's good, it's like this cognitive dissonance where you can't fathom it. There's no way to put that in your mindset because everything's supposed to be sucking right now. So you can't understand how there can be this good thing. And it causes kind of like this emotional distress. And so you have to get back to the negative, which is where you're comfortable. Don't I sound like I'm speaking from experience here? Yeah. So you have to force yourself to be grateful and to receive and to be open to receiving good things. Self-condemnation might disguise itself as a humility or as an others focus, but true humility and true others focus allows for self-focus, but self-condemnation does not allow for you to get any kind of care for yourself. It's always other people.
You know, so it doesn't always look like this, but you may have known people who seem to always get trampled on by others, you know, that they're always somewhat subservient to other people. And you're like, that person just needs to stand up for themselves. Probably what's going on in that case is the self-condemnation.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about self-reliance. You need to treat it with humility and empty your emotional cup. Self-condemnation, treat it with gratitude and empty your emotional cup. Right. Okay. So the third one we talked about was selfish taking. And when you're in selfish taking, you're exalting your neediness. You say, I have needs, and I'm going to take from you to get them met. So scriptures to think about for this are Philippians 2:3, which says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. And people who are stuck in selfish taking are doing everything out of selfish ambition and vain conceit. James 4:12 says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something but don't get it. You do not have because you do not ask God. So if you're stuck in selfish taking, you're not asking. I know it seems kind of odd. You're not asking God for anything. You're just taking from others. So let's say that you're hurting, and you're hurting because somebody is standing in front of you and you're having a conversation with them and they just hurt you. Instead of thinking, Jesus, that hurt, will you help me? Will you help me respond in a kind way or a loving way? Or, you know, set a healthy boundary if this person needs to not be able to hurt you anymore. You just go straight to taking, like, you know, I'm trying not to use profanity, but, you know, selfish taking would be like, I don't think so. I'm not letting you talk to me like that. I'm going to get you back kind of thing. You know, I'm hurting, and so I'm going to take from you. Or even something as simple as just being very controlling in your conversations. Let's say you're talking to a friend and they're just trying to talk about themselves and you keep taking over the conversation to be all about you. That's selfish taking because you're taking the attention away. You're not letting anyone else have any of it.
And just like self-condemnation can turn into depression, selfish taking can really turn into narcissism.
Yeah, right.
And so this can kind of cartoon itself in two ways, you know, or caricature itself in two ways. On the one side, you might have someone who's in selfish taking, who's seems to be a very powerful person, very in control, someone who has to control everything and doesn't mind, you know, taking from others, isn't really taking others into consideration. Then on the other side of the spectrum, you might have someone who's very awkward. It's, you know, oh, here comes that person who if I get into a conversation with them, I'm going to be here for 10 minutes and they're just going to go on and on.
And they get kind of whiny and they're like kind of weak and it's just all about them.
Yeah. So on the one pole, some people might actually be attracted to this person because they seem very powerful. Yeah. On the other side, people may be repulsed. You know, everybody knows who this person is, who's the selfish taker and essentially avoids that person.
Yeah. So I want to encourage all you selfish takers out there. You're not crazy and you're not terrible people. Well, you might be. I don't know. If you are, then you're probably not attracted to this podcast. But you're just stuck. And there is a way out. And there is a way to not just be all about yourself all the time. But you're going to have to empty your emotional cup and deal with the selfish taking. So in selfish taking, your view of God, the church, and the gospel is that they're insufficient for your needs. Your needs are somehow bigger and more profound than anything that Jesus has dealt with before.
And let me add here that when we say things like self-condemnation, the gospel is ineffectual, selfish taking, the gospel is insufficient, it's not that people who are stuck in this, if you ask them, they would say, oh, it's insufficient.
Right.
You know, this is operating at kind of a deeper level than that.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of forced to think intellectually about a very emotional topic because it's the only way that we're going to be able to take it apart and really see ourselves from an outside perspective.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to talk about the scriptures that apply and the definitions and all that, but you really have to do that or else you stay stuck in emotions and they've won. You know, they've dealt with you instead of you dealing with them.
Right.
Okay, so selfish taking can manifest as controlling or manipulative behaviors, abusive language or actions, excessive talking, interrupting, or inappropriate attention seeking, unreasonable demands, jealousy, and strife. However, it might be disguised, just like what you were saying, Chuck, as a righteous anger or zeal. If you're kind of the more powerful selfish taker, and then if you're kind of the more kind of, you know, less powerful selfish taker, it can be, in that case, disguised as suffering for Christ, especially if you just, you know, go on and on about your sufferings and how, but you're not going to complain. Let me just tell you all about it, but I'm not going to complain because, hey, I'm just suffering for Christ. You know, this is my cross to bear, but let me tell you all about every single detail and every splinter that my cross has ever given me.
Right.
So when others express needs, you might feel a little threatened. If you look and see other people getting their needs met, you know, let's say you see two people having a great conversation and someone's hurting and the other person is comforting them, you might feel quite threatened or even jealous. And you're like, hold on, why don't I have that? I want some of that. So you can actually sabotage other people's relationships. You know, not saying that you're trying to do that, but it happens.
I mean, I think one of the things that shows up here is that people who are stuck in selfish taking are uncomfortable with other people talking about or getting their needs met.
Yeah.
It's almost like I've actually seen this happen in a conversation where one person is talking and it's healthy. They're sharing, you know, some needs they have or kind of getting their cup emptied.
Yeah.
And the other person in the conversation or third party, you can almost see the panic rising in them, like, yes. Oh, someone's getting their needs met. I got to get some of that. And they just uh-huh. take over.
What do I do? What do I do? Oh my gosh, this is so uncomfortable.
I've yeah. especially seen this in small groups, like church small groups, mm-hmm. where some good things start happening in the conversation of the group. God is moving. People are making connections. And there's a person in the group who's stuck in selfish taking, and they just can't sit in. They feel like they have to take over.
Yeah.
And make it about them.
I think an important lesson is just to know that those people are hurting, because if there's someone who's stuck in selfish taking, no one's going to want to be around them because they're acting like jerks and they're kind of ruining the good that's happening. But those people are deeply hurting and they also need care. And if you find that you're stuck in selfish taking, then just realize you're hurting, you know, but you've got to stop doing what you're doing to cope because it's damaging, but you do need care. Yeah. And so what you're going to need, is the treatment for selfish taking, which is faith in God's promises. Basically, you've got to trust what we read, earlier in, it was Philippians 4:19. My God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches. You've got to trust that he will meet those needs. But the more you take, the less you will receive. You have got to put yourself in a receptive posture to God and just wait on him and receive what he wants to give you, the healing for whatever it is that's in your emotional cup that's causing you to act this way. But unless you have faith and you're in a receptive posture, you're not going to get healed, and you're going to constantly be taking, and you're not making any connections. Taking breaks connections. Right. Selfish taking breaks connections. It doesn't build them.
Yeah. And of course, as with all these, empty your emotional cup.
Yeah.
And that can be, and really is, a back and forth thing. So mm-hmm. you may be at times dealing with, how do I not operate out of this obstacle to intimacy? But then at other times, you might be just needing to work on emptying your emotional cup.
Yeah.
So that's it. Those are the three obstacles to intimacy that block us from making connections when our yeah. cup is overflowing with negativity.
So if you hear yourself in any of those obstacles to intimacy, and I know you do, then contact us. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, you can find us at chuckandbetsy.org.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, and if you're in the South like us, enjoy the cool weather. Bye.